The following is a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you. This episode is brought to you by Audible. Please visit audiblepodcast.com/podchalk for your free audiobook download. The following episode was recorded on the 22nd of November 2009. We are reviewing Doctor Who, The Waters of Mars, the latest Doctor Who special. If you haven't seen this Doctor Who special yet, it's being broadcast on BBC America on the 19th of December. You may want to hold off on listening to this podcast until that time. So please put this podcast in your pocket until you have a chance to watch Doctor Who, The Waters of Mars. Live from Davy Jones' locker on Bowie Base 1, behind spare parts of Gadget Gadget, this is Doctor Who Podshock Live.
Doctor Who Podshock.
Okay, well, let's do it.
No, I...
You know, whatever it is, if it's valuable, send it to us.
For the best in all things Doctor Who, it's Doctor Who Podshock, the podcast all about Doctor Who, the longest-running science fiction television program, with Lewis Trapani.
Hello.
Ken Deep.
Hello.
James Norton.
Hello.
News.
Fabulous.
Reviews.
Oh, no.
And fan mail for James.
40,000.
Doctor Who Podshock from the Gallifreyan Embassy.
You know, that guy James was really cool. Oh, yeah, we blew that.
I'm the Doctor, and who are you?
Give a little wave. Oh, it's breaking up. It must be the solar flares.
Talk faster.
Red planet.
State your name, rank, and intention.
The Doctor. Doctor. Fun.
What the hell?
If you could cut the chat, everyone.
Actually, chat's second on my list, the first being Gun. Put it down. The very first humans on Mars. Then this is
Bowie Base 1.
It's 2059, right now.
Oh! My head is so stupid, you're Captain Adelaide Brooke!
Where does he live?
Oh, just outside Dagestan.
Where's that?
On the Caspian Sea.
Earth is so much water. It has so much beauty.
We should like that world.
We're safe. It's hermetically sealed. They can't get in.
Water is patient, Adelaide. Water just waits. Water always wins. Come on.
Certain moments in time are fixed. Tiny, precious moments. Everything else is in flux. Anything can happen. But those certain moments, they have to stand. This base on Mars, with you, Adelaide Brooke, this is one vital moment. What happens here must always happen.
You're taking action, one. There are four more standard action procedures, and action five is...
detonation.
The final option. Nuclear device at the heart of the central dome. Today, on the 21st of November 2059, Captain Brooke activates that device, taking the base and all her crew members with her. No one ever knows why.
Captain, the shuttle is down.
What the hell do you mean?
Compromised. Miss Maggie.
Get out of there!
Too late. Forgive me.
Same old life, last of the Time Lords.
And they died, took it all with them. Walls of reality closed, the worlds were sealed.
Gone forever.
The Time Lords kept their eye on them. And it's gone now.
But they died, the Time Lords. All of them, they died.
I'm the last of the Time Lords.
Because someone told me just recently, they said I was going to die. They said he will knock four times, and I think I know what that means, and it doesn't mean right here, right now. Because I don't hear anyone knocking, do you? Three knocks is all you're getting. electricity. Bad mix now. And what else have we got?
But there's no way to speak to it.
I'll go outside. Not the heat regulator. Not beaten. Not beaten. In the spacesuit. In the next section. We're not just fighting the flood. We're fighting time itself. And I'm going to win.
Welcome to Doctor Who Podshock, and this is Lewis Trapani, and unfortunately James Norton, our usual co-host with me, is not here. He had to bow out at the last minute, and Ken hopefully will be joining us shortly. I thought he was here earlier, but he may have to step out as well. He may be at work calling in, so that might make it a little difficult for him. But nonetheless, joining me here, right off the heels of the Cultum Collective podcast, is Mr. Dave A.C. Cooper.
Yeah, I paid the two off, you know. I paid them off. Made sure I get on here.
Not only is he right off the heels of this astounding podcast, the Cultum Collective, but it's also his birthday. Happy birthday, Dave.
Thank you very much indeed. I've had a lovely day. I had lots of brilliant wishes on the Cultum Collective show and on Facebook as well. I had about 50 people post a thing there. So thank you to those people that did so. I've got my wine in celebration already cracked open.
Excellent. So, hopefully enough to go around for everyone in the chat room, everyone listening, and of course myself.
Of course, in my world, wine always wins.
Wine always wins. Forget water. So maybe that's the key. That was the missing element there on Bowie Base One. They didn't have any wine. So as you may have guessed, we're all gathered here today to review and talk about The Waters of Mars, which is the first Doctor Who special after the long, long, long gap since way back in April, I believe, with Planet of the Dead. It seems like it was a lifetime ago, but it was their Easter special or April special, whatever you want to call it. Let's focus on The Waters of Mars. We're here to talk about that. So we're finally, again, off Earth, which is always a good thing. It takes place 50 years from today. Well, actually 50 years from yesterday. Exactly. Which makes me wonder if maybe this was originally hoped to go out on the 21st of November instead of the 15th. I don't know.
Well, a very important day, of course, in Doctor Who mythology.
Well, tomorrow is an important day, because, and I should have said that before as well, that we're not only celebrating your birthday, Dave, but we're also celebrating another important birthday that's taking place tomorrow, which is Doctor Who's birthday. It's the anniversary of Doctor Who. I believe, what is it, the 46th? Or is it?
We're very quickly going towards the 50th, and I'm one of the people that hope Matt Smith will be there for the 50th.
Yeah, he doesn't look like a day over 49, but yeah, hopefully he'll. Well, it's only 4 years away, the 50th, so
exactly.
Could be very likely that he could be on board. So let's ask Matt right now. We have him on. No. Wouldn't that be? Well, you know, no, he could be on, you know, just using another alias. I think in our chat room right here, Lost Time Lord is actually Matt Smith.
Anybody wearing a bow tie?
Well, if you don't know, if you're listening to this only, when we do these live shows, there's a live chat room that takes place on TalkShoe as well. So when we refer to the chat room, we're talking about that. So if you can make it to our live show while we're recording it live, even if you're not connected via voice, you can connect via text that way.
Or you can call in on 724-444-7444.
Yeah, you have that number memorized now.
Exactly.
And when you do that, our show ID number or call ID number is 23358, and that's for Doctor Who Podshock Live. So, but getting back to The Waters of Mars, it's, as I said, it's an off-world adventure, and it stars, obviously, David Tennant as the 10th Doctor. Lindsay Duncan is his co-star this time around, playing Adelaide Brooke, and she does an amazing job. She's an incredible actress, and I think she pulled off the part very well. It's a very believable part. It's written by Russell T. Davies and Phil Ford, and Graham Harper is back in the director's seat, which is, it's kind of weird right now because we just, in the last Doctor Who Podshock, well, not the very last Doctor Who, but just recently on Doctor Who Podshock, we reviewed The Caves of Androzani, which if I'm not mistaken, was Graham Harper's first foray in the director's chair on Doctor Who. And now we're reviewing The Waters of Mars, which is his most recent outing in the director's chair. So,
and we've got Ken in the room, I think, Lewis,
Ken
as well.
Ken is in the room. Ken, is that you? Hello, Ken.
Hello.
Hey, it is Ken, ladies and gentlemen. Ken Deep.
Yeah.
Okay, hold your applause.
They can't
Everyone
shout
is muted.
Don't.
they're all applauding in the chat room.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Thank you, Ken, for joining us. I know you probably were trying to call in from work, I'm assuming.
I am. Yeah, I'm at work.
All right, so there's a likelihood that you could drop out at any minute.
I've been trying to drop out for years.
Tune in, drop out.
You've got the hair for it.
And not
no,
anymore.
No, not anymore.
Oh, big news item.
Yeah. He ran in with Gadget and there was some scissors involved. We were just giving our initial thoughts on Waters of Mars, giving our initial review. And speaking of which, it stars, well, not really starring, but there's Gadget in it, which is a robot, but not really a robot, more of a remote control device than a traditional definition of robot. It doesn't seem to be free thinking or in any way whatsoever. It just seems to be a remote control device. Wouldn't you agree?
It's nice to see Number 5 make an appearance.
Number 5 is alive.
5 is alive, yeah. Well, and the other thing that you didn't mention right off the top is that being a special, it was a high definition version again, as was Planet of the Dead. And of course, it was the full 60 minutes. So we really got an epic story in terms of the scale of it.
Yeah.
And
well, it was nice.
Hopefully it lived up to it.
It was nice that the story was in high definition as well, unlike Planet of the Dead.
Yes. No flying buses here, thankfully. Always a good sign in Doctor Who. Well, it's a horror story, and in a very classic sense, it follows in the tradition of Alien, almost mimicking on the cliche in a sense, because there's a certain structure that's there that's very evident in many space horror medium that has done this type of thing, especially in the recent years after everyone was trying to cash in on Alien and Aliens. But I don't think that interferes with the spirit of the story. I didn't find, you know, even though I recognized those elements and they seemed very familiar, I didn't find it really inhibiting my enjoyment of this episode or interfering with it. So it didn't, at least for me, others may feel otherwise. I thought also it's a story that might have worked better if we didn't know the fates for sure. I said that part didn't bring me out of the story. What did bring me out of the story a little bit was the flashbacks that the Doctor seems to be having of a web page of, you know, seeing these like web entries of their history, which is their present, you know, but it seems to be the Doctor's history or, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying, of the events of Bowie Base One. I thought that was sort of unnecessary, if you ask me. I felt that the story would have worked better. I think with any horror story, it always works better when you're first seeing it and you don't know where the characters are going. You don't know who's going to survive at the end. Even if we know that Adelaide Brooke, Lindsay Duncan's character, is to die, if we were still unsure about the others, it still would have added more to the story, I felt. I felt that was, if anything, that was, if I had to you know, draw anything that was a downside to the story was that knowing too much. And maybe some of that goes to some of the previews that were shown before seeing this, that we went into the story maybe knowing too much. And,
but can I interrupt there, Lewis?
Sure,
because
sure,
I think that would, to me, the counter to that is the fact that it makes the Doctor's imperative to save them even more clear-cut in his particular state of mind during the story, because he's absolutely certain that if he doesn't intervene, their fates are sealed. And up to now, he would never have questioned that. He would have walked away, you know, I must leave, I must go. So that certainty was probably there so that you knew that the Doctor wasn't just leaving them to an uncertain fate.
Yeah.
He was leaving them to certain death.
Yeah. Well, I think that also could have just been told if you to watch the story again and just in your mind, just imagine those clips of the Doctor's flashing back or flashing forward, if in a sense of seeing a web page of, you know, of these incidents, just removing that. I think the Doctor's face kind of tells the story. I don't think we needed to see those web pages really. I think that's sort of like banging over the head with, you know, with that information. I just thought it might work better. It just seemed to me, it took me out of the story when I was watching it. And it's not something that you usually see on Doctor Who anyway. And I think we know that the Doctor has a timeline that is longer than what we're seeing on screen. And he has memories of the past, even though it's our future. And he knows, and you know, we're already established about fixed points in time and stuff that can't be changed. So, you know, I think that, anyway, you know, I don't mean to belabor yeah. it, but...
But that length of time, of course, as well, is the fact that the Doctor arrives on the Mars alone. We don't know how many more adventures he's had between, you know, the planet of the dead and this. So there is... And I don't know whether you want to talk about the ending after the episode credits, but there's also space there for other stories to be slotted in.
Well, this leaves it open to all these, you know, comic books and all these other extended universe type of stories to fill in those gaps. So you can, yeah. there could be a whole series of the 10th Doctor with a new companion that, you know, we never see in between these specials. Mm. You know, and I don't consider Lindsay Duncan, Adelaide Brooke, as a companion, even though she did write in the TARDIS. I just, you know, I know many people, you know, will take upon these specials and these one special companions. I don't know. I don't really technically classify them so much as companions as, you know, she was a strong character, but I don't, you know. Again, I'm getting into the minutiae of
well, Rose's mother went in the TARDIS, but you wouldn't consider her to be a companion,
yeah.
would you?
Yeah. So, but getting back to the story itself, I thought it was a good, strong story. It was a fun adventure. It was technically, it was made very good. Good sound design, had good pacing. Graham Harper did a great job directing once again. Overall, I really enjoyed it. The flaws that I'm picking out here are really minor. The other thing that didn't really work for me was the Doctor's insinuating that the Dalek knew Adelaide's future, and because there's a by the way, if you're listening now, this is all spoiler stuff. So we're assuming you've seen the story. And if you haven't yet, take this podcast and put it in your pocket and wait until you have. I know it's coming out in the US or BBC America on the 19th of December. So anyway, so that's out of the way. But there's a scene in it which it's a flashback scene of Adelaide Brooke as a young child taking place on Earth with when the Daleks were having their little party on Earth. And as you know, the Dalek spared her, didn't destroy her or whatever, but the Doctor kind of implies that maybe the Dalek knew its future, and I can't believe that a lone Dalek would know, you know, her future.
Unless it was Dalek Khan, of course.
I mean, other than that, I thought it was a good story. The ending, the first time seeing it seemed a little forced. It just seemed that Lindsay Duncan's character came to these... She just seemed like in the middle of the story, she was so strong-willed that she was going to live and they were going to survive and all that. And then she turned around very quickly and following the... Basically, well, we have to follow the... You know, and believing exactly what the Doctor originally said, that, you know, that she had to die in order for the future to be saved. And it's I know it was only 60 minutes, and watching it the second time, I swallowed it a little bit easier. But the first time seeing it, it just seemed like, well, she kind of came to that conclusion, and she seemed a little out of character at first.
Well, I don't want to speak for Ken because he's here in the room, but I mean, I would have thought he would say that this has got a very high rewatchable factor, this episode, mm-hmm. and those things will perhaps, you know, when you watch them again and again, maybe something that you feel is better suited to the plot. But anyway, Ken's here. Let him say himself.
So since Ken is calling from work and his time may be limited, let's get Ken's take on this before we go any further.
I agree with what Dave is saying. I think this story has enormous rewatch value. I've watched it twice already, and I have the desire to watch it again, so that's a good sign. And I think it starts with the production value. The production design and the production value and the quality level that they wanted to achieve and did achieve in the story alone makes it very rewatchable. It's at the level of cinematic in what we're mm-hmm. seeing. The quality of the casting and the production design and the story and everything about it is very Hollywood, which is maybe kind of against what we generally think of with Doctor Who. But I really thought that they set a high watermark, and I really attribute this to Graham Harper more than anybody else, because mm-hmm. when you watch his stories, he seems to figure out a way of getting the most out of whatever he's given. You know, if he's given a dollar, he makes it into $2. If he's given, you know, 100 pounds, he makes it into 200 pounds. Whatever happens, he's very clever in getting his team, his production team, to really get the most out of whatever they're given. I agree with Lewis about the nods to Alien and also 2001 in there as well. I liked the casting, but if there's a knock on this story, I would say that I didn't feel that connection with some of the inhabitants of this base, and I found some of them to be way too close to other peripheral characters we've seen in the base under siege stories in the Russell T. Davies era.
Mm-hmm.
I would have thought that there may have been, if this was the first colony and you had to pick the cream of the crop from NASA or whatever space agency they were going to have, that they would be the balance would be a little bit better. It's hard to really bring to words what I mean by, when you look at NASA astronauts, when you look at the people on the International Space Station,
mm-hmm.
they're not as clumsy as some of the characters that we saw yeah. in this story. So although Lindsay Duncan, I thought, exemplified that, mm-hmm. I think the peripheral characters were way too flawed to be part of that team.
Yeah.
But I thought the highest point, the highest thing was the production value. The botanical gardens that they shot at, and the making the base seem real, seem large. It really felt like you were in a base on Mars. At no point did you doubt that in this story. And so that believability pulls you into the story very well. The story was very different than anything else Doctor Who has ever done. They took a lot of risks in this story, and for some people they paid off, and for other fans they didn't. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to criticize this, and I agree with Lewis about this whole suicide factor, and I didn't really like the whole Back to the Future picture-changing thing they did with, and Lewis mm-hmm. mentioned about the internet, that suddenly the story changed. But I think we also, those who are going to criticize that in this recording today, may want to review this or revisit this after we see this in the context of the Doctor learning a valuable lesson heading into his The End of Time Part 1 and Part 2. I think this is the setup for something like that, the way Utopia was heading into The Sound of Drums and The Last of the Time Lords. There's a setup going on here. There's something that he thought he could do, that he thought he was invincible, and then it all came crashing down. There may be consequences to this that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, it was the Doctor's journey, really. I mean, I think they did that with the papers as a shorthand to quickly, quickly introduce their characters at the beginning, and to quickly, you know, make the point of their fate. Because really, the story then it's the whole change in style of the Doctor and his this concept of Doctor Victorious. I think that was it. They wanted to then concentrate more on the Doctor. That was why it did that. But I mean, if you talk about the way that the people and the astronauts on the base weren't that, A-team material, you only have to watch that Defying Gravity show, and they're going AWOL on day one. I mean, these have been here 17 months.
Yes. My own take is I believe that the people who aspire to be astronauts and down the road colonists are the best of the best. They're beyond this. They are what people like us, the people who are fans of these things and look to science fiction to predict the future of our world. I look to be like an astronaut because I think they're the best of humanity. I think they're the smartest and the brightest and the best in the best shape, and they're the ones who are the first ones to go out there. They're astronauts for a very specific reason, because they're the best. And so to see them like this and to have flaws, yes, everybody's a human being. Everybody has flaws. There's nobody who's perfect. But they're supposed to be the best and the brightest. And I didn't get that impression, with the exception of the captain.
Yeah, you figured most of that's the inadequacies would be weeded out in training before they would get to Bowie Base 1.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, people who the way a Top Gun pilot, you know, our best pilots in the Air Force or the RAF are weeded out from people who are just good pilots or people who are below par or whatever, who go on into other assignments and do other things. But the guys who actually get to – guys and girls who get to fly these airplanes are the best and they're the brightest. And so that's – that for me was the only thing that the first half of the story is this very Doctor Who, very Base Under Siege, you know, meet the characters, see the cute robot, here we are, Doctor, you know, name, rank, and intention, and the funny bits, and meeting the characters and establishing themselves. All that stuff was great, and then it suddenly takes a turn, and you get Graham Harper again going back to the probably the person single most responsible for the success of the story. It comes down to direction when you've got shots of like the Doctor in his spacesuit walking away and explosions and you're hearing things. That's a tough sell. That's a very artistic choice. It's the kind of stuff that Graham Harper does very well, and it's why he was perfect for this particular story. It's why he's one of our favorites. That is the reason why he's the one guy from the classic series who's been able to cross over.
Yeah. What did you think of the fear factor and the actual aliens themselves, Ken?
I thought they were very creepy. Perhaps I was, in my mind, and after so many months, I was building it up to being far darker than it actually turned out to be. I found, as an example, I found Blink to be a scarier story. But that's strictly, you know, emotional. That's strictly, well, I found Blink to be a little bit more spooky, but I could definitely understand how the concept of these aliens and what was going on was very terrifying. But we've kind of run our course in some ways with what can we make, you know, water always wins. Well, sand always wins. Well, ice always wins. Well, air always wins. Well, the sun always wins. The poetry of the Russell T. Davies era, we don't always have to be poetic with things. And so that kind of stuff, that style of storytelling, I'm glad that we're going to have a fresh approach to Doctor Who. I'm not knocking it as much as people would think. You know, we know this is the last hurrah for the current team, but it's going to be exciting to see the way a new producer and a new set of writers and a new Doctor interprets the stories and interprets the the concept of Doctor Who. It's going to be refreshing. And Doctor Who always reinvents itself at exactly the right time, and we're approaching that right time.
Doctor Who always wins.
Yeah, Doctor Who always wins. Well, actually, we do, because we always get the same show, but a different show at the exact same time. We get the comfortable shoe that is Doctor Who, that we know fits just right and feels comfortable, but yet it changes color for us, or whatever. It's the current fashion trend. It's wonderful in that way that we get to the show itself regenerates just like the main character, and we're getting a regeneration in more ways than one, and it's exciting. It's an exciting time.
It's success. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna say that you know, like I said, I would remind people to, before really taking some of the things that Doctor Who did differently and experimented with in the story, let's wait to see it as a whole. I enjoyed it. Did you sit down? Did you enjoy it? Was there a fear factor? Was excitement? Did anything catch you off guard? And a few things in the story that kind of catch you off guard, and there's a wow factor to it. And I'm going to give it 4.5 out of 5 TARDIS groans.
That's what my rating is.
And I think the only reason that I take it down from 5 is I agree with you that I didn't know what to make with this whole suicide thing. And then there's these two characters who run off are completely unexplained, so that keeps the timeline messed up. you know, that those kind of things were just a little weird. The review may change based on the next two stories, but it was just a thrill. I mean, this episode was a thrill. The Confidential was very good. I didn't listen to the commentaries yet.
Yeah, same here. I still need to do that.
And, but did you not think,
I would also say, look, while we're on this touch of a review, should we talk a little bit about the trailer and the Children in Need trailer as well? Are we kind of reviewing that at this moment?
It's fair game.
I think the trailers look great. I really do. I thought the trailer, the cat's been out of the bag about John Sim. I got raked over the coals once for mentioning that John Sim was going to be in the finale way back in the summer. If you don't know John Sim is going to be in Doctor Who next month, you've been living on Mars.
Yeah. After post-Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, it was announced by the BBC itself, so I think it's fair game now. It's no longer spoiler.
I mean, even on the official site, they mentioned that his wife is going to be in the story. I mean, they're not even hiding that. The fact that they're not hiding that means she's like in the first minute and that's the end of it. Yeah. That's the way I view it. The fact that they're just announcing that she's in the story means that she's hardly in the story. That's just seems to be the way they operate.
And John Sim is on the cover of the new re-released version of The Writer's Tale.
The Writer's Tale, yep.
Yeah, Russell T. Davies.
Which brings up something we talked about a few months ago. According to the updated Writer's Tale, the name of part one of The End of Time was supposed to be the Nightmare Rain. Wasn't it Nightmare Rain? Rain, R-E.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you had mentioned that
sure,
in the previous show.
So
they were
teasing
us, certainly.
I don't know what became of that and why they may have decided to call it The End of Time Part 1 and The End of Time Part 2.
Maybe because it's coming out on Christmas and they wanted to make it less frightening. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough to sell a nightmare scenario on Christmas Day when everybody's, you know.
Except for the nightmare before Christmas.
it goes to DVD and Blu-ray, it will come out as a single long film.
It's a possible as well that they may do an omnibus thing, or they have the ability to chop it up depending on syndication.
Well, they've been avoiding the whole part one, part two type of thing here since, you know, Doctor Who came back in 2005.
Yeah,
each story had its own, you know, with starting with Aliens of London, and then we were expecting to see Aliens of London part two, and we got World War III.
Yeah, and it was kind of a nod back to the Hartnell days, where every episode had its own title.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, you had to know that these two were joined together. So it is a departure from what they've done in the past. And I'll kind of leave it open-ended that I don't, you know, there's nothing chiseled in concrete that it's going to be End of World Part 1, End of Time Part 1, End of Time Part 2. We'll know in a month, I guess.
Yeah.
And then in The Children in Need, we saw a couple minutes of End of Time Part 1, according to what they're saying it was, which had the doctor on holiday and name dropping and coming out with a lay and, you know, meeting up with Ood Sigma. Is it Ood Sigma that he meets?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're not sure whether he's actually there, but the actual clips for next week seems to suggest that.
And he sits down with Ood Shaman or priests or soothsayers or whatever they may be in a circle and hold hands, and he sees their dreams, their nightmares, and we see John Sim. Oh, did I spoil anything? Oh my god.
Well, we didn't say what character he's playing.
We've only said
John
Sim's playing the guy
returning.
From Life on Mars, which ties into the waters of Mars. But fantastic, great tease. Can't wait for Christmas Day to see Part one, and I wish they would. I know that they've been very generous to this point by saying it's airing on Christmas Day and then it's airing on BBC America on December 26th. But please tell us what the rest is. It's only a week later. Just make the official announcement. Say it's New Year's Day. Say it's whatever day, whatever time. Just say it already so we can take the days off or make arrangements for everybody to gather around the TV. Why be coy about it at this point?
Yeah, it's they have a habit of keeping this until the very last moment. And then, you know, just like this story here, we were still guessing. We were guessing the 14th as of, you know, 2 weeks before. And then, you know, they finally, you know.
Well, there's indications in this story that they were planning to air it a week later. Because well, that's the story set on November 23rd.
Yeah, I had mentioned that earlier in the show that it takes place on the 21st, suggesting that perhaps maybe they originally intended this to go out.
Be in Children in Need.
Yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, or and maybe part of the Children in Need pageant.
Yeah, yeah, that would
be. Yeah, to tie
the
it
Children
in
Need could
that.
Lead right up, right into it.
Mm-hmm. So they're. Also, the fact that it went out on a Sunday was unusual. Yes. So it was almost like, well, oh, geez, where are we going to put this thing? Which is bizarre for Doctor Who, that this should ever be a question. It should be Doctor Who in the schedule first and everything else around it. Unless yeah, there were sporting things that you know couldn't be changed.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Can I just ask, Ken,
because
there's an awful lot of people already got their names in the queue here
are
chomping to go, I think. Would you say it's... I mean, I know you rated it 4.5. Would you agree with me that it's the best of the specials? If not one of the best episodes, it's the best of the specials. Put it in against Voyage of the Damned and The Next Doctor Christmas Invasion.
Yes, I would say so far it's the best of the specials. I did like The Next Doctor from a fun point of view. I enjoyed
from
that.
A holiday movie.
Very good, light, fun romp kind of thing. But if you were going to say from the 2009 perspective, because there's only been two, I definitely like this way more than Planet of the Dead. I thought that Planet of the Dead would have fit in perfectly as a mid-season story, but as something you were building up and waiting for. The only real novelty was the fact that it was in HD. This deserved being in HD. This was like something that was going to be cinematic and big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you wanted it to be in HD. You wanted to be able to say, this is huge, and I would have loved to have seen this on the big screen, as they did with the premieres, the press screenings and things like that. This just, you know, I hope we get to a convention, whether it be at Gallifrey or something like that, where they show something like this up on the big screen and show it in all its glory. And I think I'm probably getting that sort of pang to see that, because Lewis and I yesterday saw some clips from Star Wars on the most enormous high-definition screen in the world. And so you suddenly said, God, I got to get this thing on Blu-ray. And it's the same kind of feeling. Like, you know that this high-definition stuff can very easily be bumped up on a big screen, and we could really just – we could see it in almost a cinematic glory.
Live it.
Yeah. All right, well, I'll stop chewing up everybody's time. There's a ton of people who want to get in, and so I want to say – thanks to everybody for participating, and I will. I'm going to mute out, and then if I have to bow out altogether, I won't disturb anybody.
All right. Well, if you do have to leave unexpectedly, thank you for being here while you can. I know it's understandable that you're doing this from work, so.
And thanks to my folks here at work for allowing me a few minutes to come and geek out.
Which is always a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Cheers, all right, boys.
Dave, what did you like and what you didn't like about this?
Well, I'm going to be brief because I know that the people have been gnashing their teeth and wanting to get in here. I thought it was the best of the specials. I think it was almost a 5. If anything, knocked it off a 5 for me. I wasn't too keen on the little gadget, Inspector Gadget, 5 Alive thing. But I believe that they did have to have some fun moments in it. I loved the journey that the Doctor makes from the very carefree person he starts off the adventures, and then during the progress he's denying it, the explosion of the rocket, and then something snaps inside him and he makes this decision that he is now the arbitrator of what is and what can be and what should be. And it's a story that they couldn't, although it's a pity we know what's going to happen, it's a story that we can only understand because we know that his time is coming to an end, and that they wouldn't allow the Doctor to explore this territory otherwise, because they've always said that they can have scary adventures, scary monsters, but you must be able to trust the Doctor. And this is a Doctor you might not be able to trust. So is he going to actually try and put other things right? Is that what's going to happen between now and the final? But then I think people want to come in. I'm going to get shot soon if I don't shut up.
They're not going to shoot you on your birthday.
I don't know. They're baying for blood.
Let's hear what some of our listeners have to say about this story. So in the queue, we have a lot of people waiting. If you're not in the queue, please put yourself in the queue, and we're going to try to get to everyone if we can, time allowing. Without any further ado, we're going to step into the dark side with Mr. Darth Skeptical. And let's welcome back to the show, Mr. Darth Skeptical.
Hey,
are you there, Darth?
I believe I am.
Very good. So did you like and what didn't you like about The Waters of Mars?
You know, I think that Doctor Who specials since the return of the series in 2005 have largely been about moving the format of Doctor Who into new directions. Like The Runaway Bride is the first sort of true screwball comedy in Doctor Who. And Voyage of the Damned, though I didn't like it that much, was an homage to sort of the Irwin Allen disaster pick. Now, here we've got, you know, psychological thriller, the investigation of sort of a single person and what their mind goes through in difficult situations. I think it's a little bit different than Midnight, which might have been also a psychological thriller, but that's more about the group mentality, the examination of what happens to a group of people in a dangerous situation and how quickly they can turn on other people. This is really investigating the transit of one person's mind, the doctor's mind, through a difficult situation. And it works well enough once. But for me, it has zero rewatch value.
Really?
Yeah. It's a simple storyline, and once you know how it all works out, the first 50 minutes become entirely irrelevant. I have, usually after episodes of Doctor Who, I find myself compulsively rewatching them. But this one, zero desire to see it again. Like,
now, is this because it's a horror story? Because usually that's the case with a lot of horror stories. Once you know how it all ends, it loses some of its edge.
Right. But I think this is a little bit different than most suspense stories because it honestly, because of the way in which the structure works out. See, normally in a Doctor Who episode, and we find this out in a little comment that Russell C. Davies makes in the commentary, there's a rule set forward. You can't have the Doctor solve the problem by just taking the people away in the TARDIS. And that one of the things that he wanted to do with this episode was to break the rule and show why you can't break the rule. And so we see in a narrative sense the consequence on the Doctor's face of having broken this very rule, having changed history. But there's a consequence to the audience, I think, as well, because by having the Doctor just take everybody away by the TARDIS and not telling us what the flood was about, not telling us what the glacier held inside of it, all that stuff that happens on Boy Base One doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. It's clear that what the author is intending is that you get past all that crap and you see what the effect of that is on the Doctor and to an extent Adelaide. And so to me, I don't care about the first part. I don't care about the first 50 minutes really at all. After I've seen it, I'm done. The only thing that is of any interest whatsoever is the last bit in London. And even that, you can only rewatch that so many times. Mm-hmm. So, and not only that, but, you know, I have personal biases against Graham Harper. I hate him as a director. I really think that he's completely overrated by the Doctor Who fan community. And they love the whole story of Graham Harper. You know, oh, hello, here's somebody back from the days of the classic series. And
but what is it about Graham Harper that you don't like?
He's very conventional. He's very conventional. I mean, I think that he was innovative back in the 80s. But to me, he's just, like, especially in this story, he uses a lot of visual composition that we see over and over and over again in the horror genre. It really didn't impress me. And it never really does with Graham Harper. And it's also, I don't like the cinematographer he chooses most of the time. Most of the time he chooses, I forget which one of the two, you know how there are two on Doctor Who. But he chooses to have his stories lit really brightly and lit with warm colors instead of cool colors. Whereas Uris Lynn chooses generally, the cinematographer who chooses cool colors, to grade things and whatnot. And I find that most of the time with a Graham Harper story, there is a fundamental disconnect between the seriousness of the situation and the way that it looked. It always just looks so pretty. His shots are pretty. And I don't like that. Whereas with Uris Lynn, a lot of times you get, really big camera movement in very simple situations. I mean, just look at Tooth and Claw, just the camera movement of in the sequence immediately after the title sequence of the camera coming straight down the time rotor and lots of movement with the camera. Even in Fear Her is saved entirely by the fact that it's directed by Uris Lynn. Harper is, he's very competent. He's really good with actors. He does tell, he tells solid stories. There are definitely Harper stories that I like, but I think that this story doesn't have any rewatch value based on the direction. It's competent. As I said, it does tell the story well. It does emotionally bring you in. I was on the edge of my seat watching it the very first time. So it works. It's just not that creative in terms of direction. And then there's the music. Oh my God, what the hell was Murray Gold smoking?
I liked the music. I thought it was good.
There are points in the music where it's good, but you know what? All the good music is after the point that the Doctor decides to come back. After the
That's where the story takes off, isn't it? That's when the real meat of the thing, as you said, the actual threat at the beginning. And just point out that Randathor entirely agrees with everything you say. He concentrated on that final part because that's really the change of the Doctor throughout it. It's the Doctor's story, not the fate of the astronauts.
Right. And I mean, I agree. It is good that the music is in, the good music is actually in the part that matters. But the thing is, that's only 15 minutes of the story at most. I think it's more like 12, which means that you've got this whole load of really conventional crap to start with. And even some like electronic synth, which he almost never uses before, like when they're running in the garden area. I don't know. It's a really weird Murray Gold soundtrack in a way. Though, yes, really good stuff where it mattered. But for the most part, it makes it less rewatchable to me, that first part. Because there are plenty of Doctor Who stories where I know how things end, like Midnight, or, after you've seen an episode of Doctor Who, it has lost its surprise value. But for some reason with this one, there's just not enough good in the part that, in the bulk of the episode, to rewatch it over and over again.
You don't think that was because of the 60-minute format? I mean, you're not saying that the story didn't justify that length, or are you saying it could have been told as a standard episode?
No, I have no problem with the format. I mean, clearly I've rewatched Journey's End, which is, 75 minutes? Or it's certainly longer than 60 minutes, over and over and over again. So it's not that. It's really just, I'm not complaining about not being able to rewatch it, and I got to make that clear. It is good. It's just, I really take issue with the fact that there is that much to gain from rewatching the first 50 minutes of it. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, like, one of my favorite movies is The Manchurian Candidate, but I've maybe seen that at most 3 times in my lifetime. You don't have to compulsively rewatch something in order to find it good. It's just, I think it's, a little weird to say, oh, great, Graham Harper's back. Well, that's not going to give me a lot to rewatch. And there's not really that much in, David Tennant's performance in the first 50 minutes to think, I've really got to go back and see how he handled that. It's weird, like with Unicorn and the Wasp, which is a story that not a lot of people like. At least there's, there's stuff along the way.
Something of interest that you find there.
Right, but there are huge clumps of narrative in the middle of it. And it's just a murder mystery too, really. Like the scene in the middle of Unicorn and the Wasp where he gets poisoned. That scene is amusing enough that you would want to see it more than one time. But there's really nothing like that in the middle of this episode.
No, so that's why. Anything, I can't agree with that. That was cringeworthy, I thought, that whole section. The same as he did when he was getting rid of radiation out of his feet on the moon. Mm. To me, those are cringeworthy parts. But again, that's one of the great joys of coming on these sorts of podcasts, that people have such different views and pick different things from it.
Right.
But I agree, the real strength of this story was. I think I would rewatch it because it was so subtle to me, the change in the Doctor's demeanour. I mean, I know you can actually put your finger on the actual point in time where it happens, but it was still a subtle change in the direction and mood. But I don't know if you're ready to give a rating yet, because I know there are others in the queue.
Yeah. I mean, I would just say, before I give that rating, I mean, I would just say I would agree somewhat with Ken, who says, you know, the rating for this episode could change. And that's very true, because I have this sense of dread about this episode. I really do. It could go either way. Because really, it's a very flimsy thing that's making the Doctor change his attitude towards life. The whole business of fixed point in times, if you really think about that, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, it would then mean lots of other things are fixed points in time, like Journey's End. It has to have happened that Davros was there to, you know, create this situation by which Adelaide would find the inspiration to go into space. And, you know, her whole lifetime would then have to be a fixed point in time. Who she met that she had a child with, the fact that her parents had met and had her, lots and lots of different things would then from that become fixed points in time. And so therefore the difficulty with that, with the Doctor's change in attitude, is that it's based on something which is fundamentally kind of wishy-washy. So I really worry as we get into these next two episodes that they won't just discard that notion, that they'll explain it a little bit more, that they'll give it some more backbone.
I said that reminded me of an old science fiction book, a very early science fiction book called Prelude to Space, where they take different generations of a family. You know, one went to the moon and then the next generation went to Mars and so on. So whether he's got that idea from reading science fiction of the 50s and 60s, you know, this.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there are lots of different sources perhaps for it. But the thing is, it makes me uneasy about this episode, thinking that this is, you know, the beginning of the end, as the tagline says. So therefore, to understand how this particular set of events could have caused the Doctor ultimately to regenerate is difficult at this point. And if they don't integrate this story with the rest of what's going to happen, then I think I'll look back on this not too kindly. If they do pick things up and they do actually try to explain a little bit more about this sort of nebulous fixed point in time business, and they explain it well, then I'll probably think better of this episode. As it is, I think I can only give it really about a 3 out of 5, and that's very tentative.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. All right. As always, we thank you for your insight and opinion, as always, Darth.
Thank you.
We're going to continue on. And before we go on, I do want to just take a quick moment to let all our listeners, especially our live listeners right now, we know Thanksgiving is coming up, and we have a little special offer for you for Thanksgiving. And actually, this is coming from a sponsor of Doctor Who Podchuck, Audible.com, who is the internet's leader provider of spoken audio entertainment. If you've been listening to Doctor Who Podchuck, you've probably heard us talk about Audible.com in the past. And because of the Thanksgiving holiday that we're in now, and this is a limited time offer, is between today, starting today, the 22nd of November, to Thursday, Thanksgiving Day in the U.S. And I'm assuming this is going to be a U.S. offer, a U.S. only offer. So what you can do is, during the holidays, if you're traveling, a lot of people do travel, you can listen to some audio entertainment. You can take advantage of this offer. First-time Audible listeners can download a free audiobook with no credit card required just by visiting audible.com/Thanksgiving. And you can download, let's just say you want to listen to The Hornet's Nest, Tom Baker's first outing in a long time as the Doctor. Maybe this is your chance. And this is all for free, no credit card required, but you have to hurry because it's only from today, starting today, to the 26th Thanksgiving. Once again, the URL is audible.com/Thanksgiving, and you'll get your free download without any credit card, without anything. Otherwise, you can always use our URL for Audible, which is audiblepodcast.com/podchalk to get your free Audible book download when you sign up for a free trial.
That sounds a very generous offer, because that might be putting one or two people off doing that first initial location, so they can go and have a taster without feeling as though they have to put that data in. That is an excellent offer.
Absolutely, Dave. Choose whatever title you like. We've been showcasing of late The Hornet's Nest, which is Tom Baker's return story, and it seems to be the hot item as of late, so you can choose that. And if you do, this is a preview from the first part of that story. This doesn't have Tom Baker in it, but it has Richard Franklin, who had played Captain Yates in the series in the past. Somehow he returns, and here's a preview.
And mine alone. And then she went on to give me details for how to get there from London. So there I was, the very next day, having transported myself to the altogether frigid back of beyond. Perhaps I was losing my marbles, I thought, as she led me into a cosy sitting room. Possibly this whole thing was a kind of chimera, and I was about to embarrass myself, chasing shadows, chasing memories.
Help yourself to the drinks. He always does.
Thank you. Will you join me?
I have never touched a drop in my life, sir.
And with that, she left me to it. I gazed round the room, which contained a pretty extensive collection of books. Never been much of a reader, I'm afraid. This seemed a pretty rum bunch of tomes to me. I helped myself to a soda water and prepared myself to face whoever it was had drawn me here. And just then, the grandfather clock struck 13 times. In that moment, I knew that I'd been right to follow my intuition and to come here. I had the most curious sense of vertigo, a feeling that once again, my past was about to catch up with me. I had indeed been called.
Yeah, it's a free download. This is it. Happy Thanksgiving. We have to thank audible.com for this and allowing us to share this offer with Doctor Who Podchalk listeners. And I just wanted to take some time during a live show because it starts today. So if you want to take advantage of it and you're listening to the live show and, you know, you no need to wait for the polished post-production version of the show to go out on the feeds, you can take advantage of it. So that's why I know there's people waiting in the queue that are looking to get on the show, but I did want to do a call out so that you have an opportunity to grab a free Audible book download. And again, that's audible.com/Thanksgiving. And if you're listening to this afterwards, audiblepodcast.com/Podchalk for your free audiobook download as well.
Yeah, Benjamin's asking in the text, but I think you already answered that you think it's just for the America at the moment.
I believe so. I believe there. You can try it. I'm not sure is my answer. I suspect that it's U.S. only, but you never know. All right, well, speaking of Benjamin Elliott, let's get him on board and see what he has to say about the Waters of Mars. Hello, Benjamin.
Hi, Lewis, Dave, and the gang.
Welcome back to the show. It's good to have you on board. Benjamin is a regular on our website, rather, with This Week in Doctor Who. He publishes it not only on our website, but on other websites, including a Yahoo group as well. And you can keep on top of all Doctor Who programming, as well as related programming such as the Sarah Jane Adventures and Torchwood, and all over the world. It's a comprehensive list, and I don't know how you do it, Benjamin, but hats off to you.
Thank you very much. Okay, so Waters of Mars aired last week, and my first thoughts watching the story was the folks with the DWO online must be feeling, DWO WhoCast must be feeling very smug. Because if you remember, anyone who listened to their April Fool's podcast, they were talking, which is supposed to be set in the future, they were talking about the Doctor's latest adventure, stuff like the Spear of Destiny, and they basically predicted the Doctor going evil. Now, they predicted it 4 years off, but I have to think they must be feeling that they were rather clever with that one. Yes, we watched this story in a big local Doctor Who meetup yesterday with a bunch of fans, and it was rather neat because it was exactly 50 years to the day before the story was supposed to happen.
Yes.
Yes, so November 21st, 2009 versus November 21st, 2059 had a good effect on the audience. It was a very interesting story. I think the story really served as be careful what you wish for, because often we've had a whole bunch of lightweight Doctor Who stories over the years, and sometimes there's a thought of the doctor has to be on the right side. He has to be a bit too gentle. And we're so happy when we get stuff like Torchwood, because the character is allowed to go to dark and disturbing places. And there's a thought that Doctor Who should be hard-hitting. It should be like the Virgin New Adventures. And sometimes a story like this can be useful to figure out just exactly what is the line. What is the end of our comfort zone? And I think for some people, Waters of Mars really hit a nerve. But we don't want the Doctor to go that far. And maybe we don't want the Doctor to cross some lines. So it was very interesting there. Like, maybe Matt Smith's season, maybe they'll be able to take advantage of this. And we like, see what happens when we let the Doctor go too far in this one direction. See, maybe we knew what we were doing the last 4.5 years. I also think it's interesting that with Adelaide in the story, because with Adelaide, the Doctor didn't cause everything that happened in the story. The Doctor was egged on for a fair amount of the story, much of it by Adelaide, because you have this person saying, I shouldn't be here, I shouldn't be here, and she presses him for information. And she was pressing him to save the crew, And the trouble is, by the time she realized that the situation was supposed to play out, she'd helped egg him over, and she bore a fair bit of responsibility there. Like the doctor blew it. The Doctor went over the edge, but he was helped. He was not acting alone. On another show, I heard there was a discussion about how much the Doctor may have been influenced or manipulated into this situation. And certainly Adelaide unwittingly did manipulate. And I think it's interesting that the Doctor's acting in this way. She thinks that she comes at the end of the story, she's thinking of him as a menace. And normally what you would do with something like that is eliminate the menace, but she doesn't do anything to the Doctor. Because in the end, the Doctor had only done what she'd asked for. He saved the crew. The story was very murky, and Darth's right, we are going to have to see how the last two episodes play out to properly rank it. I would give it 4 TARDIS groans right now, because I did like it. I think I may have liked it more than he did, but it was very unnerving, very unsettling, and it does make you wonder what exactly is going on.
Well, then I think Russell T. Davis would be think job done, because, I mean, I think that's what he was aiming to do, wasn't it?
Yeah, I do think he wanted to grab people's attention and wanted to turn everything up topsy-turvy before he left.
I think it's probably on his way to bring the 10th Doctor's story to a close and to start with a clean slate with Matt Smith, and so I think that's where this is all leading. All right, well, thank you very much, Benjamin. So you would give it, what did you say, 3 or 4?
I would give it 4 TARDIS groans out of 5 right now. And I would want to see, and like Dark, I would want to see how they tie it to the end of time and where they go with it. And
yes, because like you said...
It was a good story, just obviously very, very dark.
Yeah, and I mean, like Utopia showed so much promise, and what we can almost consider a 3-parter, there's always the concern that it goes pear-shaped.
I said that as well, that this was going to be a standalone episode, but it's going to basically be the welcome mat to the final two episodes. You know, this is going to lead right into that, and I think that's what we're seeing. All right, well, thank you again, Benjamin. We have others to get on, so I don't mean to rush you off, but I do thank you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. I think we're going down under, right? To Romana 2. Hello, Romana.
Hello, boys.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Fine. Certainly very can. Clear.
So you either are up very, very, very late or up very, very early.
No. It's now gone 10 a.m. on the 23rd of November, so I'm talking from the 46th anniversary of Doctor Who, so...
Yes, yay. Happy anniversary. See, we're a time-traveling podcast. We're speaking to the future right now.
Yes, I'm speaking to the past. And speaking of the past, The Waters of Mars. I love this one. What can I say? It was epic. I was blown away after I watched it for the first time. I generally never really judge Doctor Who too harshly, so... I mean, like you guys were talking earlier about how you found Utopia was, like, great, and then it was kind of disappointing the way it played out. I personally love The Last of the Time Lords, but I know I'm very much in the minority there. But anyway, things I loved about this, I loved seeing the Doctor in the spacesuit again from a fuel fangirl point of view, because there's something about that spacesuit that just does things to our heads. But, you know, I loved it being on Mars. As a fan of War of the Worlds, that amused me highly. I love the fact that it was on Mars. Love the little reference to, you know, the David Bowie song "Life on Mars" with it being called Bowie based one.
Oh yeah, same here.
I love that. And yeah, the flood was a freaky as all heck. They were really interesting monsters, and they were just really well done. And the fact that we don't learn much about them is both a good and bad thing. I would have liked to have known why they were digging up the glacier at the end, but at the same time, you know, I can forgive that. It's not a big thing.
It's a little mystery. It's maybe something mystery that could be explored in a future episode, perhaps, or explained.
Perhaps. But yeah, I actually like the ensemble cast in this. I was very happy to see an Australian character in the series. That was quite an interesting fact for me. And
it was
an
international... crew there, wasn't it?
International crew, yeah, definitely. And I also found out, because when I watched this for the second time, I paused my thing and I read all the little bits on the website, and his character's actually from Adelaide in Australia, so it's kind of interesting that in you got a character called Adelaide and you also got a man from Adelaide in the same story, which is kind of interesting. Adelaide, who at the time of the screening of this episode was in the middle of a heat wave, which is, I don't know, a little bit of a coincidence. I don't know. The crew, they were good. The end, I have to talk about, because, yeah, the Time Lord Victorious Doctor was a stroke of just really, really just blew my mind away, basically. All of a sudden, he just snaps and just pretty much, I draw this parallel to something that Dave Tennant said in The Confidential, where he's going to rage against the dying of the light. He knows he's going to die, but he does it. He's just going to rage his way into oblivion, essentially. And also, it's almost him becoming slightly like the Master as well, which is could be picked up on in the next two specials. Because there's a line in Last of the Time Lords where the Doctor's talking to the Master, and the Doctor says, "You're changing history." And the Master says to him, "I am a Time Lord. I have that right." So it's kind of a parallel there. You know, he's thinking, "Hang on, I am a Time Lord. I have this right." And taking the Doctor to that dark place is really interesting, and I'm really excited about the next two specials, needless to say. Random thing to mention that I don't think you haven't listened to the commentary yet.
No, I haven't.
The set of the main set was actually built in the Torchwood Hub, which I didn't notice until I listened to the commentary, because it looked so different. And I guess it's the fact they don't need that set anymore.
I don't see it.
Yeah, like, it's only once I look at it now that, you know, that you can see the circular door and you can see the little room that Steffi backs into, where that's where the armory was. But I was kind of a little like, oh, they're really not thinking about using that set again, are they? And that kind of made me a little sad, but anyway.
Well, it's not the first time they reused that set. And The Next Doctor, it was used as well.
But the thing with The Next Doctor is that it didn't look like they had changed it that much. Like, even before looking at watching The Confidential and listening to the commentary, I could tell that was the hub. They didn't really change the structure of it. That, if you know the set as well as I do, like, you can tell. This one, I didn't even notice, and it was just the fact that it's so different. Like, I don't know, maybe they might use it again, but, you know, it's kind of being blown up, so I guess they can't. But
I thought that reference, you know, to Rage Against the Dying of the Night, I thought that was a Shakespeare quote, but I was corrected. It's Dylan Thomas, isn't it?
Yeah. But yeah, like, yeah, he's pretty much just going to rage his way into oblivion. And just, there's also the idea that when he says no after he's seen Utsig Marin, he realizes, oh no, what I've done. He kind of goes from the palace of Sulk for a bit, but then he kind of just snaps and says no, which makes me think that he's not going no because he wants to fix things. He's going no because I want to screw things over more. I'm going to change time to suit myself because I'm going to die anyway. What's the point? I'm thinking he's going to, you know, maybe go back to the Time War, go fix up Donna, go fix things with Rose. He's going to do all this stuff, and then that's what's going to bring about the end of time. But that's just my pure speculation, just based on what I know about the Christmas special, which isn't much. I'm trying to say spoiler free. Yeah, needless to say, I'm looking forward to Christmas, but this episode was definitely great. I've watched it. I agree with, I think it has rewatch value. I've watched it about 5 or so times now, but most of those with commentaries or doing commentary. So I think I've seen it all the way through without commentaries about 2 already. And I'll be watching it again next Sunday at the Dr. Call of Australia meetup. So I think it's got rewatch value, but it's definitely a great one. I mean, after I watched it, I just couldn't function for a while. I was just totally blown away. And when I showed this to my friend, she had a bit of a brain explosion, and I was witness to that.
That's
a
bad thing.
It was pretty epic, the brain explosion that she had. And yeah, it kind of fell over. Like, we were sitting down watching it, and then she kind of fell over and like was just rolling around squeeing. It was kind of amusing, actually. But anyway, as for ratings, I'll wrap it up. I'd say I'm going to give it a 4.5 as well, pending how this relates to the rest of the specials, because I think that, well, the fact that the doctor's always saying I should leave, and doesn't, is kind of like, if he had a companion at this stage, if he had Donna with him, I think he would have left. Like, Donna would have forced him to leave, because Donna knew all about, you know, fixed points in time, like from Pompeii and all that. She would have dragged him kicking and screaming back to the TARDIS, and the fact that she doesn't, and the fact that she's not here, possibly might be picked up on in the next special.
Well, it depends on the companion. Sarah Jane might have forced him to stay. You know, if you go back to Genesis of the Daleks, when the Doctor was, you know, I was about to destroy the Daleks from ever existing, you know, by touching those two. Well, I'm assuming you've seen it, but
I've actually seen that one.
So there's a point there which the Doctor could have prevented the entire future of the Daleks and everything that they touch and do, you know, and Sarah Jane was egging him on and, you know, saying you must. And so you never know what kind of, you know, it depends on the companion.
Yeah, it depends on the companion. But I think if it was Donna, then it wouldn't have gotten to this stage, because
if it was Donna post, you know, depends which Donna, you know.
Yeah.
It was
Pompeii Donna, she would, I think. Mm-hmm. Post Pompeii Donna, she would.
Well, there was definite parallels there, and even the Doctor himself mentioned Pompeii.
Yeah.
All right. So, what did you gave it 4 or 4.5?
Four and a half. Pending how it all plays out. Everyone's hoping it's all going to play out okay. There's a bit of everyone's a bit hesitant and a bit worried about how the end's going to happen. Especially with,
all right, so for everyone that's players, having giving ratings pending on how it all plays out, when we review the End of Time Part 2, we're going to have you all back on, and you can give us your final ratings of The Waters of Mars.
And you can expect a lot of crying coming from me when that happens, because this is my first regeneration as a Doctor Who fan. So Dave Tennant is my Doctor, so it's going to be a little bit hard to see him go. And if Russell T. Davies...
It's understandable.
Yeah,
we've all been there ourselves.
If he makes him go out in a way that, you know, I don't like, I'm not going to be quite happy. And I'm not happy enough with Russell T. Davies as it is. So if he does one more thing to make me, you know, to do, because I'm not going to be a happy fangirl. He's already done a big thing to me this year, and if he does one more thing by screwing over the way Ten regenerates, I'm not going to be happy. But anyway, we'll leave it at that. And yeah,
he'll ruin your Christmas at his peril. There's an awful lot of chat going on here, Lewis, but one thing I just noticed that Charlie79 has put, the Dalek flashback also looked like that was shot in Sarah Jane's attic. You know, when we're talking about the hub being used.
Yeah.
It was.
Because she's looking up at through like an attic, like a ceiling window.
Okay.
Yeah. And okay. Somebody else was
It actually was. In the commentary, they say it was Sarah Jane's attic, that scene.
Oh, okay. So, again, a reuse set. Well, you got these sets, and you might as well reuse them instead of, you know, building from scratch, you know.
Yeah, and somewhere in the text, somebody's mentioned, of course, I don't think we've mentioned that the Ice Warriors get a nod.
A mention.
Too, yeah.
I like that, actually, because there was a lot of speculation saying they might be in this one because it was, you know, Waters on Mars, but it was nice to see that they were mentioned just in passing, which was nice.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, yeah.
Well, thanks again, Romana.
No worries.
All right, cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
It was Lost Time Lord who has put that in text. Thank you.
All right. Well, it was a good. This is one good thing about the time change for this live podcast is that our friends down under have a better ability to join in with us. All right. So let's continue on, and we have Robert next up in the queue. Welcome back on the show.
Hi, Lewis.
Hi, welcome back.
Hi, Dave. How's everybody doing?
Hi, Robert. Great.
So what did you like or what didn't you like about The Waters of Mars?
Well, I really enjoyed this, and I got a chance to review it on my show this weekend. And what can I say? Sci-fi doctor at its best. It was a lot better than The Planet of the Dead, so to say. So that's one plus for it. Where I kind of disagree with you a little bit, Lewis, is I really like the info things, and I thought it was a way for the story, and I think that's why they did that, was a way for the story to move along instead of the doctor coming up and talking, you know, to them and getting their bios or histories that way. You just do it on the screen whereby you just, you know, get it out of the way. And I know
I don't think it was needed, though. I think you could tell that same story. You can watch that same episode right now. Excuse me. You can watch that, rewatch it again, despite what Dot Skeptical says. You can rewatch it again and just in your mind take out those scenes. I think it works just as well, if not works better, just from David Tennant's acting and what he sees, what you see in his face. You can see that he knows their future and knows that they're doomed. And I don't think it needs to be kind of thrown in your face like that. And also it just, we've never seen this before. We don't know what he's flashing back to a website, and it just, I don't know. It just, it takes you out of the story. For me, it took me out of the story.
See, it didn't take me out of the story. It's just basically the doctor going over the information to his mind, and it was being revealed.
And the information in his mind comes from a website, you know, and I don't know.
It's just... But hey, you know, that was the fun part for us. We could pause and read them all as they came up, and that's what I did. I did read them. So
I'm sure they were counting on.
I think it was a shorthand, really, shorthand to get that amount of information across quickly.
Well, there were some mistakes on it too. Darth brought that attention up this weekend too when we were kind of talking about, like, they got, you know, her birth date wrong and stuff like that because she was. I think 10 or 11 when the dialect situation came up in her life. And it was kind of interesting that, and I know this was brought up about the, I guess since the dialects can travel in time like the doctor, maybe they have some kind of sense to where they can see into somebody else. I don't know.
I thought it was when she was about 9, and now she's 59. This happened 50 years ago. I thought that tied in. With her dates, at least.
Yeah. I was saying she right around 9 or 10, but I thought that was a nice little flashback for her. I really did enjoy the makeup and the way the flood was presented. I kind of had a feeling, and even though I was corrected, that I kind of looked at him as a ice warrior-human hybrid, but that was up to different interpretations of people. Some feel that it wasn't the Ice Warriors anyway. They just basically got the mention in the story, which still is pretty good to go back to Classy Who with that. I didn't enjoy the story. I thought the story was, you know, well done. You kind of had a feeling that the Doctor was going to get into a situation to where he thought to himself that, you know, hey, you know, I'm the only one left, the only Time Lord left, that I should have the right, I should be able to, even though it was pointed out to him by Adlin that no one should have that right. And this is where we get the thing, and it's been mentioned before, about the Doctor having a companion, where it shows that the Doctor does need a companion to kind of stop him, like in the turn left where, you know, what if, you know, the Doctor wasn't there, and the situation where Donna wasn't there to tell the Doctor enough was enough during the spider situation in that. And so you see where you don't have the companion helping the Doctor out, and it kind of goes wrong, and, you know, the opportunities came for the Doctor to leave, and, you know, the nice touch, too, of bringing the suit from the Impossible Planet out. So I guess the Doctor was able to fix the helmet to get that to work, but, I, you know, where everything was just boiling up to where the point where he finally does get ready to go, but having to hear what was going on in the base that whole time was, you know, just, and then when the ship exploded, you could see him just snap and go in there, and, mm-hmm. you know, he just wasn't going to let time defeat him. And I think he just, you know, went over, and then for that moment when they arrived back, just that glimpse of evil. I mean, we all have a dark side, we all have a light side, and, you know, the Doctor's no stranger to that than the rest of us. But I wanted to ask you, Lewis, did you feel the twist at the ending when the Doctor, and here we got the sonic screwdriver used in this one, opened the door for her, and as she closed the door, didn't you feel that there was that possibility that she was going to shoot the Doctor instead of taking the other way out?
No.
I didn't get that feeling that she was going to shoot the Doctor. I just felt it might have been a bit out of character for her, seeing that she really wanted to survive in the middle of the story. She seemed to be a very much a survivalist type of character, where she wasn't going to give in or let anything stop her. And then it just seemed like, granted, she made the revelation that she, you know, the future needs to be preserved, and it just seemed like it was a compressed amount of time from the TARDIS ride to landing. You know, it didn't take that long to arrive back on London, on Earth, from Mars. So, but granted, it was only a 62-minute story, so they had to somehow get that in, and they did.
The thing that spoiled it for me, and we've got Graham Sheridan in the room, Jokerphile Media, and we were talking about the Carnival of Monsters on his recent show. I don't know if that's gone on iTunes yet, but there's a scene there where the Third Doctor and Joe are locked in a room, and she says, "Why don't you use your sonic screwdriver on the door?" He said, "It's a mechanical lock. The sonic screwdriver doesn't work with that." And of course, Adelaide's door would be an automatically Yale lock. So in actual fact, his sonic screwdriver shouldn't have opened that door.
Yeah, but the sonic screwdriver is used way too much, you know, it's too...
It's on electrical doors and things. I mean, he's used it to seal doors afterwards. So, like, they've opened an ordinary door, and then he sort of sealed the mechanism afterwards. But he doesn't usually open... He usually has to pick locks that are ordinary.
And I did like the robot, but I would have liked it to be, you know, I mean, imagine in the future, you know, the future, like in Forbidden Planet or Buck Rogers or whatever, there's always some kind of robot. I would have liked it to be a separate entity like K-9 is. And, you know, the little throwback thing to the Back to the Future in a sense where the Doctor is able to make the robot go from 2 to 100. And 2 seconds, I thought that was kind of interesting on that part. But overall, I mean, it was a great story. I really enjoyed it. I like I said, I feel it's better than the last two specials that we have. And mm-hmm. I would give it a 4.5 out of 5. It seems like 4 out of 5 seems to be the average that's going around with a lot of people.
Yeah, it seems to be the
and nice touch the with spot. The tribute to the late Barry Letts. That was very nice of them to put that.
Yeah, it was a good dedication, a good point that you make with that. Yeah, they dedicated it to Barry Letts at the end of the episode.
That was very, very nice.
Robert, before we move on, I just want to give you a chance to, you mentioned your show, so where can people find your show?
It's Doctor Who Review Today, and it's co-hosted with Darth, and whenever we get Ramona back from the other parallel Earth, it airs at 1 a.m. on Saturday morning, and it's show ID 22756. So.
Oh, so Darth is co-hosting with you.
Oh, he's been doing a great job. We just got done reviewing Delta and the Bannermen.
Speaking of flying buses.
Yeah, we were talking flying buses.
That's right. Where it all began.
Well, and, what I'm really looking forward to, Lewis, is what's coming up next, and that is...
I am the master.
And you will obey me.
Well, I thank you guys for letting me on here and having the time to talk.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being on. I know we're in overtime right now. So,
oh, definitely.
I know I had mentioned Graham was going to be the last one on. So I know there's someone else that just entered the queue there. We're going to try to get as many as we can on, but we are in overtime right now. All right. Well, thank you again, Robert.
Thank
and,
you, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And happy Thanksgiving. Happy birthday to you, Dave.
Thank
talk
you.
To you later.
Thank you, Robert.
Talk to you later. Bye, guys.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Running along next is Charlie. Welcome to Doctor Who Podshock.
Oh, hello, Lewis.
Hello.
First-time caller, so long-time listener. Thanks for having me on here. Hello, Dave. Nice to talk to you again.
It's fantastic having you on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. All right. So
what did you like and what didn't you like about The Waters of Mars?
Well, the first thing the first thing in my comment is the whole website bit, because it was shocking, you know, to see that thing, because it's one of the rare instances when we see inside the doctor's head. It's just one of those things, like, you know, it's just kind of one of cardinal rules that they broke right off of the bat. It's like, you know, you're not supposed to see what the doctor's seeking. So, like, the whole, that's one of the things of like target novelizations, or remember they have the books, you're not supposed to see what he's thinking about. And then we get into like a traditional story about the whole doctor arrives on a base, something bad happens, somebody thinks the doctor's responsible, so we're on our way. The only thing that's missing is that he doesn't get locked up in a cell for about 25 minutes. yeah, well, that happens.
That's the extended director's cut. We'll have that in it.
Right. and then more exposition goes on. Of course, I did like the bit about the Ice Warriors. I was kind of sorry there was no shout to Sutek, the Destroyer, because Pyramids of Mars is my favorite story, and I thought they could have said something, but you know, no biggie.
Yeah, that's right. Good point. I forgot about that.
The highlights for me there are just the bits between the Doctor and Adelaide about how he talks about her future, and Tennant's really good at spelling out dialogue like that about you know how important people are, and of course, you know, she is important, she's very important, of course. And that comes back, you know, at the end when he talks about, you know, the little people. You know, I like the scene where he's in the spacesuit and she forces him to tell him what happens, and the whole like reflection, you can see the reflection of her face on the doctor's face on the monitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I saw that too.
It's sort of similar to what happens with her and the dog. She looks in the dog, and the dog looks back into her. I like that Dalek scene because when I thought about that, I pictured myself as a 9-year-old, 10-year-old. If it would be scary for me if I looked out, you know, there's a window right here over to my right. If I looked over here and a dog shows up, that'd be terrifying for me. still to be terrifying for me.
Well, I thought the scene worked well. It was the doctor's explanation that I only had a slight problem with.
Right.
But I thought the scene itself, it explains maybe why she, you know, what motivated her to go into space and explore space and,
right.
You know, and
we didn't need it. We didn't need that dialogue.
Well, if I can jump in there, one of the concerns I had of it was that if, like the doctor says, you know, nobody knows why the base originally blew up, that's not really much of a thing for the daughter. But the point is that the way it ended with the base blowing up on the moon and the very same day Adelaide being found dead in her own house back on Earth, that's
right.
More of a mystery. That's much more likely to build the curiosity up of relatives, because they would be perhaps, you know, researching that, and decided they want to go into space, maybe make it all the way to Mars and have an opportunity to find out what had happened. So in a convoluted way, that may have helped the system, although that wasn't obviously the doctor's intention. He was trying to... not go mad, as I think somebody said, but really suddenly. But it's like these famous guest stars and artists and that. You know, if they start to once believe their own publicity, then they're usually in for a fall, aren't they? And that's the doctor's almost believing his own publicity. He's all powerful. He can do what he wants, and there's nobody to hold him in check.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I like the bit with Tim, sort of, you know, he talked about, you know, no one's going to stop me, you know, that part when he's on the base on Mars. That it kind of reminds me of something like Rain of Morbius.
Underwater menace. Nothing can stop me now.
Yes. Yeah. But something like Rain of Morbius, when he's like yelling at the Time Lords because he thinks that they've stopped his TARDIS. That kind of bit, you know, that kind of, he's kind of doing that sort of, he's kind of channeling that kind of anger or some sort of energy. I did feel like, you know, I have the crew members are sort of, it's like a, you know, two-dimensional, the whole you know, robot whiz kid kind of thing, you know the Russian guy. I know I did like the, I like his little bit with, you know, him talking about his brother while the other crew members slowly transforming into a water creature, you know, and
mm-hmm.
But I noticed, you know, I was sort of thinking, oh, like all these people, and then they start dropping off like flies, and I start feeling sorry for them, like, you know, Roman getting the drop of water in his eye, and I thought, oh, I started moaning, like, oh, I don't like these people, but I don't want bad things to happen to them.
Mm-hmm. I thought that character was kind of surprising, because some of the characters seem to be a bit cliche, and some, like, we've seen them before in other type of stories like this, and I thought Roman was going to be more of a wormy or type of character, where he was going to, you know, perhaps hide the fact that he got water, that drop of water, and try to you know, escape with the others. But it sort of surprised me that he was brave enough to stay behind and knew that he couldn't infect the others, and I thought that was a surprising element for the character.
And, you know, and that whole bit with Steffi and the wall of water coming towards her and her, you know, locking her room. That was like, oh, that's like one of those kind of cringe-worthy moments for me. One last thing is I just really liked David Tennant's performance, and because there were bits where just, you know, the whole, you know, I should go. Just those little bits where he's just, you know, like the camera's on him, it zooms in on him, and he's just looking around. And you can see the wheels turning in his head. You can see, you know, you really see him pondering about that. And
mm-hmm.
At the end, that whole bit where he talks about, you know, oh, I'm good, and, you know, him spying off about Time Lord victorious and all that stuff, and he gets really, you know, really, you know, serious, and then he just flips and he goes, oh no, you gotta get inside, oh, the door's locked, and just like, oh, how can he do that? And then I have to agree with Robert, that whole bit where there's that part where she pulls the gun out. For a split second, I did think he was going to shoot the doctor in the back, and then, oh no, she's going to, you know, do herself in. And I did think,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking about the, you know, putting myself in the family's point of view, of thinking that's how, oh man, you know, waking up, seeing, you know, finding your, your relative dead on the floor. It's like, oh, I was thinking, man, where's the show gone to?
So how would you rate this story?
I've watched it twice, and I'm going to stick with 4.5.
Another 4.5.
Right.
Well, thank you once again, Charlie. I know this is your first time calling. I want to thank you for listening to the show and participating.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks. All right. Happy Thanksgiving as well, if you're celebrating that. It's an international show, so we're going to move along. I believe I know which Russell this is. Hello, Russell. Are you there?
Hello, Dave. Thanks for letting me speak. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Yes, and as always, you're coming in sort of garbly.
He's downloaded.
Oh, really? You know what? I think
he's downloaded.
No, I'm not.
Can't be... Oh, all right.
I try to improve technology, and it doesn't work.
I know the last time you were on, you were doing your Syl impersonation, and it's again, you're doing Syl again.
Yes, I could do it again. Overall, I think Modern Mars was a good special. I agree with everybody in that it was more tenseful, more exciting than Planet of the Dead overall. Mm-hmm. I think the monsters, creatures are more threatening than just this swarm of bugs, really, which was essentially what Planet of the Dead was. I liked the character movements in this. This first, and I haven't seen too many monsters where he'll walk into a situation, assess him, and go, I have to leave. You know, that's rare. Usually he's just, what can I do? So that was nice to see a change in the character that way. And to actually see him walking away from it, knowing, you know, everything's going to crap. Which was a nice, you know, nice change from the usual, I'll just do what I can to fix it. And that dark turn near the end, that was, I have to say, that could go in one of the top genuinely creepy moments of David Tennant as the Doctor. Way he just flipped right there was pretty good. We haven't seen that side of the character from that actor a lot. So I liked that turn of character, how he just got really creepy and really omnipotent for a bit there. And I don't know if that's foreshadowing End of Time, really, but it was nice to see that kind of turn, you know. And that did creep me out. And I agree with that. I thought near the end she was pulling out the gun to just pop him, just out of the sheer arrogance of his nature. And when she did, you know, when she did shoot herself in the door, I was like, oh, okay. That sort of fixes it. So it was an interesting episode. I thought the music was fine. I agree with everybody. It did pick up near the end when he turned around and decided to try to do something about it. I thought that scene with the actress and her daughter and the vid screen there was just heartbreaking and really sad. I thought, wow, what a nasty way to turn that way. Because it just, and again, it's just another one of those moments you don't usually see in Doctor Who, that they play it that harsh, you know. So overall, I think it's again, part of this series finale, so I think how it stacks and how it leads into End of Time is going to be interesting. I'm curious to see how they bring back the Master and how it ties in with the whole ring and the whole, you know, how...
Oh, we'll see that in the next two specials.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how they tie it in and if people are going to go, well, that's a little rubbish, or, okay, we'll believe that. That's what most of us are really curious to see is, okay, when we've seen the Master come back countless times, Anthony Ainley, how many times did he die? And then... come back. But they always...
Well, that's the whole thing with the Master. It seems to be a tradition now that he keeps on dying and coming back.
Right, but I think the audience today is a little more critical of that and a little more, okay, we just don't want some kind of excuse from coming back. Let's make it good.
Yeah, but sometimes with the Master, of course, he's not actually regenerating. He's taking over another body. Yeah. Now, you don't know whether that's classed as a regeneration. It's something that the Time Lords can do, but most of them, from a moralistic standpoint, would never do. So you don't know that's a different thing.
Yeah, I mean, Amy, a lot of his, especially with Peter Davis in there, he just seemed to, he looked like he was dead, but then he'd come back in another serial, and he'd just say, oh, I just got out of that. And go, okay, and on with the show. But so I don't think the audience these days is going to accept just that kind of bad excuse. It'll have to be something a little more significant. I'm guessing, I'm a cult now, DNA in the ring, and that's what does it.
Well, aside from speculating what's going to come up in the next special, okay, how would you rate this special?
I would rate this one a 4, because I really enjoy it, but I'm going to give it a 5, because I'm hoping like I do with any kind of regeneration story, this is going to be good. And this will really wrap up to, you know, a good way to end the Russell T. Davies era and bring on the new, which we're all looking forward to. I guess spring will be the kickoff.
Yeah, it hasn't been announced yet, but we are assuming it will be spring. Though if it comes out earlier, we won't be upset.
No, none of us complain if like a month after the Christmas special is out. No. Yeah, overall, a solid 4, and thoroughly enjoyable.
Well, thank you once again, Russell. And I know you're in Canada, so I won't wish you happy Thanksgiving. But you do have there is a Thanksgiving in Canada, isn't there?
Yeah, ours is in October. It's an earlier harvest. We don't have the whole pilgrims thing that it doesn't apply to us.
So happy belated Thanksgiving to you then.
Thank you. And just a reminder that on my podcast coming up, this coming week, I will have an audiobook review of Where in the World is Osama Bin Laden.
He's on your podcast?
No, but I'm going to review the audiobook. And the PS3 review of Lego Indiana Jones 2. So that's all coming up on the Rambles Russell podcast.
And where can people find that?
That is ramblingrussellibson.com, which your show gave birth from. So, you know, I'm still a... I can still consider Poshuck a parent.
Oh, well, thank you. And we have many children out there.
Yes, you guys inspired me to do it. So
thank you again, Russell. I'm going to try to get Graham in and then possibly one other, but we're way into overtime now. So thanks again for being on our show.
No problem. If anybody...
if anybody else like Guest 40 wants to put their rating in, the ones without mics... and that's Guest 40, who's Lightfoot, I believe. His rating, 3.5 to 4. So if Merlin or any of the others want to put theirs in quickly.
Last but not least, let's get Graham on the show. Mr. Graham from Germany.
Hello, Lewis. Can you hear me?
Hi, welcome back.
Gee whiz. Rushed away all the way through work and made it in the door. I wasn't sure if I was going to make it in the end.
Where well, I'm glad you did.
Thanks very much.
Hopefully you didn't run over too many people in the process.
No, it wasn't too bad. It's pretty windswept here at the moment, so nobody's on the streets. Anyway, getting into this story. Now, I'd done on my podcast two months back, me and Dave sat there after the 200 came out from the Doctor Who magazine, and I basically explained my top 10. And I'd done my top 10 Doctor Who's in the variant that I had for each of the 10 Doctors. I had the best story for each of the Doctors. Now, with Waters of Mars, my number one story for David Tennant has changed to Waters of Mars from The Next Doctor. This has also completely upset my table, as in that I originally had A Genesis of the Daleks as my number one. Waters of Mars not only displaced my 10th Doctor favorite episode, it's also displaced my favorite episode of all time. This is now my favorite episode of all time, despite the whole little, as you watch again and again, you nitpick things like when the Doctor says, 60%, the human body's made of 60% water. No, the human body's made of 80% water. Well done, RTD, for not checking your facts again. It's, you know, little things like that. But really, there's only one little thing in the whole of the... it's just like Genesis of the Daleks.
These were dehydrated humans. Mm.
But there's only the one thing that spoilt a little spoiler. Well, like Genesis of the Daleks had a little spoiler thing in it, which was the clamshells, which I thought were pretty poor. There was only one poor point for me, and that was the gadget robot saying gadget, gadget the whole time. Because it just seemed to me that it was more of a cerebral type of show. It made you think a lot more, which is probably why a lot of Who fans are so used to not having to think with an RTD show that this one makes you think. And it's like, hang on a second, what did he just contradict? And it makes you think the whole way through because of the amount of contradiction, and it's just totally cerebral. That's what came across to me the whole way through. So I loved it from beginning to end, apart from the whole gadget thing there. It was quite funny.
Did you just didn't like the, I'm hesitant to even call it a robot, but you didn't like the device saying gadget?
Yeah.
Is that it? Or just didn't like the device at all?
Yeah, basically. Because I could imagine that, you know, some guy thinks it up as a joke. He said that. He says, well, it's a joke. I think it's funny. Well, if that's your sense of humor.
Well, every episode has to have a toy that they can. Every episode has to have a toy they can sell down the line. That's this week's toy.
Dave, if that's this week's toy, does its hands drop off with the gun in the hand?
Well, every toy I used to have as a kid did that. Usually about Boxing Day.
I mean,
what Graham is alluding to is on Confidential, they had, which is the behind the scenes making of the episode. They explained that the prop of Gadget has the hands kept on falling off, and David Tennant says he couldn't understand why that was the case, but and it was a problem for them.
Well, it's probably one of David Tennant's hands. His keeps falling off.
Yes. Going back to the first special, the Christmas Invasion.
Mind you, they've probably got a running supply of hands off Captain Jack there, who keeps picking them up as they drop off, you know, after each regeneration. Yes, anyway,
you have to hand it to Russell T. Davies. All right, I'm keeping all my hand jokes.
No handyman around the house either. Ooh, bad joke time. Since Ian's not here. But it does remind me, I think you guys would call it in the States now, what was it, G.I. Joe's? Back as I was a kid, around the time, it was around the time of the Fourth Doctor, the G.I. Jones back then, they started getting what they called these gripper hands, and they were made out of rubber there, and it reminds me of the hands kept on dropping off, the fingers just kept on dropping, it reminds me of back then. So, as far as, there was lots to think about in this one, especially the sort of, after the rescue, and they're back on Earth, and the Yuri and the Chinese lassie run off. There's a whole bit of there with the sort of balance of time and that, and you can obviously see that the Doctor's going off the deep end. We know. I was just waiting for it. We knew that RTD wasn't going to let him go off the top there. It was being a master sort of type character. So, you know, well, what are they going to do? Yeah, it's a bit of a bum rap there. Why not kill off the sort of the best character in the whole Blumen production there? Other things I found kind of odd, because I kept on hearing a few other podcasts that have been reviewing it, Flash and Blade and that. Shane for Neighbours was then her sort of denied love interest, and I was like, I couldn't even remember him looking like that. He's definitely not aged well, but this story was excellent. I'll give it my marking of 5 TARDIS groans out of 5. I'm probably the only person here that's done that so far.
Excellent.
Oh, very good. Well, Graham, before you go, I know we've given the other podcasters here an opportunity to plug their show, so I don't want to be remiss and not have you having a chance as well. You have 2 shows, in fact.
Right. The last one I just did was, Dave came in as a guest, is B-Movie Invasion, the classic sci-fi podcast. We talk about all sorts of classic sci-fi. Anything 25 years or older is classic sci-fi, but it does mean it began 25 years ago. So Doctor Who I can bring in because it started more than 25 years ago. And I did a Tripods episode as well a wee while ago. And my other one is a Doctor Who parody called Professor Howe. I'm starting with the Second Doctor as a period at the moment because I just couldn't get to grips with a decent impersonation of the First Doctor. Oh, by the way, I'm sat here with a lovely T-shirt on a moment. If you go to the Gallifreyan Embassy website and follow the links, you can get a lovely Podshock T-shirt. Support the podcast and keep it going. Because
very good. And it's the holiday season is a great time, a great gift item as well.
Yes, and I'm looking forward to hopefully getting myself a hoodie to go with this, a red hoodie, because of the old song here from Adam Sandler, red hooded sweatshirt. If anybody knows that
we should also say that Graham's been doing our special reports from Germany now, so He has he's done one already. He has another one in the can, and it's going to go in an upcoming Doctor Who Podshock episode.
Yeah, I just wanted to plug that. The German report for Doctor Who Podshock. I'm pleased that you asked me to do it. I'm quite happy. And I got in touch with the guy in charge here of the fan club in Germany and had a quite good chat there. There's some quite interesting material for future Podshocks, so I'm going to put that in now and again.
And both your shows can be found here on TalkShoe.
And on TalkShoe. TalkShoe ID for Professor Howe is 59601. For B-Movie Invasion, the ID is 57949. And just like Doctor Who Podshock, if you type it into iTunes, you'll find me there as well. So before time runs out, I think there's one guy that was in the list there waiting to get on. So
yeah, we're going to try to get him in very quickly. But thank you once again, Graham.
Not a problem. And catch you later, Lewis.
All right, take care. Cheers. We're going to take this very last one. We're going to have to make this quick, though, because we're way, way in overtime right now. It's Who Am I?
Hello.
Who are you?
Hello, Lewis and Dave.
I think we know who you're not, or the mystery caller that has been sending us feedback.
Sorry for the long wait.
Yeah. One thing, like, I found about what's smart, it seems different from the trailer that she had earlier. Also, this thing, the doctor could have saved the captain's life if he didn't actually tell her about all the things. Or at least that's my opinion.
Say that again.
The doctor was telling her, like, what's supposed to happen and that about her dying. I think if he didn't say that, she wouldn't have killed herself at the end.
Oh, yeah, well, she wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If the doctor didn't reveal all this, what future is supposed to take place, then she would, like I said, she's a survivalist, so she would have just, preserved herself in any way she could.
And it was more far-reaching, wasn't it? She realized it wasn't just a fact of her and her family. It could influence the whole of the human race going out into the stars, and since she was an astronaut herself, to her, that would be where our future lay.
Yeah. Actually, I wonder what's supposed to have happened to the last two. Did they just go off?
What was that?
The other two people that came back in the charges. Did they
wander off? It was left unanswered, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think. Also, in the classic series of Doctor Who, with the ice wires, was there any mention of that being living on Mars? Or is that just from Big Finish?
No, I think they were established that they were from Mars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So how would... I don't mean to rush you off, but we're way over late.
Yeah.
We're over time right now. We're late. So how would you rate the story?
About 4 TARDIS grams.
Okay, so you enjoyed it.
So,
and you're looking forward to the next 2 specials?
Right? Yeah.
All right, very good. Well, I can't thank you because I don't know who you are. Your Who Am I is how you're represented, and I guess we're gonna keep this mystery going.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Who Am I, and that's gonna wrap up this show.
Can I just add a couple of things? Yep. First of all, Merlin has put a jokey rating in. His rating for the show is pi. I think Romana wanted to be unmuted, if you can very briefly unmute her, so she can give a plug to her show. And while you do that, can I just remind everybody that the Cultum Collective did a show on Waters of Mars earlier today, and our talk show ID is 54821, also on iTunes. So if you can give Romana a little unmute, perhaps just...
We're going to go down under once again. To Romana too.
Hi, I completely forgot.
Hi,
to
I'm
it
sorry
up.
We didn't give you a plug for your podcast.
As
I typed into our chat, I can't keep track of how many people have.
I know.
Their own podcast
it seems like
now,
everyone
so.
Has one nowadays. But yeah, mine is the Wailing Fangirl podcast. Call ID on TalkShoe is 2228. It's also on iTunes. Last week we just put out our Waters of Mars coverage, which was an audio commentary and a short review. And yeah, so that's my show. And Lewis, I'm just going to post something in the chat for you now. I got my Podshock T-shirt, and I went out to Sydney Harbour, and I took my photo with it.
Good
girl. It's not the best photo due to the fact that we went at night, and my camera's not the greatest, but there's me in my Podshock t-shirt, which I'll be wearing to Gallifrey. So, yay!
Fantastic. You know what? For some reason,
it's working for me.
I can't highlight it.
Yep, and it's got Sydney Opera House in the background.
Yeah. Couldn't get this Harbour Bridge and the Opera House in the same shot because they're kind of technically quite apart, far. Well, where I was taking the photo from, Circular Quay, it's hard to get them in the same shot. So, yeah.
If I can ask you to do me a favor, email it to me at Gallifrey, or you're not on Twitter, are you?
Well, no.
Email it to me at lewis@gallifrey.org.
I'm on Facebook.
Okay, so you can send me the link on Facebook, because for some reason it won't let me select it to copy and paste it.
No worries. I'll send that to you then.
No, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. Yeah. Fantastic.
I'll send it to you. Yes.
And we've got one more rating from Mythic Doctor Who, 4 TARDIS Groans.
Great. I want to thank everyone for participating in the show, and I know we're now...
We're at the
2-hour mark. So that's our 1-hour show.
It's Ken's fault.
Thank everyone
Ken's
for...
fault.
Ken was on earlier as well, and we have to apologize for James. He was going to be on the show, and then at the last minute, he had to bow out. So again, thanks everyone for participating. Also, for those that it pertains to, have a happy Thanksgiving, and I can't believe we're heading into the holiday season already. I don't know where this year went.
Mm.
And also, Dave, happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much.
Once again. And one last time, the Cultum Collective can be found on TalkShoe at, what's the call ID number?
It's 54821, and also available from iTunes. And we have a cultum.com website with all the info.
Great. And Dave, I want to thank you for putting together the Asambo clips that you put together for Waters of Mars. We played one already, and we're going to close the show with the other one. We're going to save that for the very end right now. One last thing, tomorrow is the 23rd, which is the anniversary, so all you Doctor Who fans out there, please celebrate Doctor Who's anniversary. Make sure you watch something of Doctor Who. I'm sure that's not going to be difficult.
Yeah, and try and catch the little episodes of Dreamland if you can. Certainly worth a watch.
Yes, Dreamland is currently on right now, so that's one way to celebrate the anniversary of Doctor Who. So that's going to be it for this show. Be sure to visit our website at thegallifreyembassy.org or podshock.net. Both will bring you to the same place. You can find Dave on Twitter at twitter.com/DaveAC. You can find Ken Deep on Twitter at twitter.com/KenDeep. And you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/LewisTrapani. And of course, you can follow Doctor Who Podshock on Twitter at twitter.com/Podshock. And it will keep you abreast of all the Doctor Who news that comes our way. You have been listening to Doctor Who Podshock Live, presented by the fan-run GallifreyanEmbassy.org. Doctor Who is owned and trademarked by the BBC. Doctor Who Podshock is not affiliated with the BBC in any way. Come back next time for another exciting and informative episode of Doctor Who Podshock. You can email us at feedback@podshock.net. Doctor Who Podshock theme music by Jeff Smith at thejeffsmith.com. This has been a production of Art Trap Productions, brought to you by the Gallifreyan Embassy, and has been made possible by supporting subscribers and donations from listeners like you.
Isn't anyone going to thank me?
He's lost his signal. Doesn't know where he is.
That's my house.
Don't you get it? This is the 21st of November, 2059. Same day on Earth.
And it's snowing. I love snow.
What is that thing? It's bigger. I mean, it's bigger on the inside. Who the hell are you?
Just think, though. Your daughter and your daughter's daughter, you can see them again. Family reunion.
But I'm supposed to be dead.
Not anymore.
But, Susie, my granddaughter, the person she's supposed to become, might never exist now.
Nah. Captain, I'd like to inspire her face to face. Different details, but the story's the same.
You can't know that. And if my family changes, the whole of history could change. The future of the human race. No one should have that much power.
Tough. For a long time now, I thought I was just a survivor, but I'm not. I'm the winner. That's who I am. The Time Lord victorious.
And there's no one to stop you.
No.
This is wrong, Doctor. I don't care who you are. The Time Lord Victorious is wrong.
That's for me to decide.
Is this it? My death? Is it time?